Imagine a teenage girl who stays up until 2 a.m. completing unnecessary extra credit assignments, spends hours perfecting a single selfie, hoping for validation through likes, and feels her stomach twist into knots when a boy texts her. This isn't the exception. It's increasingly the norm. Under pressure has become a cultural phenomenon, landing on bestseller lists and earning praise from parents, educators, and celebrities like Reese Witherspoon, who featured it in her book club. Author Lisa D'Amour, with her Harvard education and decades of clinical experience, has created what the Washington Post called the definitive guide to raising stressed-out girls in the 21st century. Drawing from her work at an all-girls school and her private practice, D'Amour reveals that while stress and anxiety aren't new to adolescents, today's girls face unprecedented pressures, amplified by social media and cultural expectations. What makes this book revolutionary is its counterintuitive premise. Not all stress is harmful, and understanding the difference between healthy and unhealthy forms can transform how we help our daughters navigate these turbulent years. Stress has gotten a bad reputation, but it's actually essential for development. Just as runners build endurance by gradually increasing distances, girls develop resilience by successfully navigating challenging situations. This process creates what psychologists call stress inoculation. People who overcome difficult experiences often develop higher than average resilience when facing new hardships. For example, a girl who learns to manage pre-performance jitters before dance recitals may later handle college interviews with greater composure. Parents should aim for a Goldilocks approach to their daughter's stress, neither too little nor too much, but just enough to foster growth. This might mean encouraging her to try out for the debate team despite her nervousness, while ensuring she's not overwhelmed by taking on too many activities at once. Whether stress becomes harmful depends less on the stressor itself and more on available resources – personal, emotional, social, or financial. A broken arm might be manageable for a girl who writes with her other hand and has supportive friends, but devastating for someone depending on an athletic scholarship. Understanding this relationship between stressors and resources helps parents support daughters by providing additional support when needed. This could mean hiring a tutor during a particularly challenging academic semester, arranging carpools during busy sports seasons, or simply being more emotionally available during times of transition. Psychologists categorize stress into three types: life events, like moving or starting a new school, daily hassles, smaller inconveniences that compound stress, and chronic stress, persistent, difficult circumstances. Daily hassles might include homework deadlines, friendship conflicts, or family responsibilities. Chronic stressors could involve ongoing family tension, financial strain, or health issues. Research shows that accumulating daily hassles often determine long-term emotional difficulty following major stressors. This explains why we instinctively cook for friends with new babies. We're reducing their daily hassles during a major life event. Similarly, helping a daughter manage her daily schedule during exam week can prevent minor stressors from overwhelming her. Anxiety, while related to stress, serves as an evolutionary gift designed to keep us safe. Our sophisticated brain alarm system triggers discomfort that compels us to avoid threats. Unfortunately, anxiety has gotten a bad reputation. We've developed the unhelpful idea that emotional discomfort is always negative, when psychological distress actually serves as a feedback system for course correction. For instance, anxiety about an upcoming presentation might motivate better preparation, while social anxiety might alert us to relationship dynamics needing attention. When girls get anxious, they should ask themselves why their alarm is going off and how best to address the underlying concern. When anxiety activates, it triggers four interconnected systems: biological, fight or flight response, increased heart rate, sweating, emotional, nervousness, fear, irritability, cognitive, vigilant scanning for threats, difficulty concentrating, and behavioral, freezing, seeking help, avoidance. Though this elaborate response can be exhausting, it often serves a useful purpose, unless it malfunctions into an anxiety disorder requiring professional intervention through cognitive behavioral therapy, psychodynamic therapy, mindfulness practices, or sometimes medication. parents can help daughters recognize these different components of anxiety and develop appropriate coping strategies for each aspect, such as deep breathing for physical symptoms or journaling for emotional processing. When things go wrong, our daughters often hold it together at school or with friends before falling apart in the privacy of our homes. How parents respond to a girl's distress can make things much better or much worse. One critical insight: avoidance feeds anxiety like a two-course meal. First, dodging a perceived threat provides immediate relief. Second, sidestepping fears prevents us from discovering they're overblown. Phobias develop when people routinely evade what they fear, like someone crossing the street to avoid dogs and never learning that most are friendly. When girls melt down, they often reject our well-intended advice, making us feel as helpless as they do. This emotional transmission happens when overwhelmed teens induce their distress in others. The solution? Let their mental glitter settle before trying to help. Rather than jumping in with suggestions during these emotional storms, stay calm, offer water or a walk, and simply wait. This approach shows girls we're not frightened by their feelings while allowing their rational brain to come back online. When girls express irrational fears like, "I'll never get into college," our instinct to reassure rarely works. Instead, engage their concerns earnestly with empathy. "Oh, honey, it must feel awful to even think that." This approach acknowledges their emotional state without dismissing or indulging their fears. Girls often know their catastrophic statements aren't literally true, they're communicating distress. Quibbling about facts or responding with cheery optimism misses the point. Digital technology gives parents unprecedented access to details about their children's emotional lives, but this isn't always beneficial. When teens send alarming texts, then refuse to respond to concerned replies, parents spend the day worried, while daughters, having digitally dumped their emotional junk, feel immediate relief. One creative solution: a mother gave her daughter a notebook to write down thoughts instead of texting them, which allowed the girl to process feelings without burdening her mother with concerns that often resolved themselves by day's end. Building margin into family schedules creates resilience against everyday stresses. When families operate at maximum capacity, minor disruptions like a sick child or car trouble can trigger crises. Setting baseline activity levels at about 75% of capacity replaces chronic frenzy with relative calm. This approach not only reduces stress when inevitable problems arise, but also creates space for spontaneous joys, like an impromptu rainy day walk to school. Girls' friendships typically make their lives better, providing fun, company, and support through difficult times. While these relationships usually ease stress and anxiety, every girl will eventually experience troubles with her female peers. Many children labeled as having social anxiety may simply be naturally shy or slow to warm up, a normal temperament that research shows is detectable in infancy through brainwave patterns. Rather than trying to change these innate first reactions, parents should help children accept their initial hesitation and develop a second reaction to new situations. Research shows that the happiest girls are those with just one or two solid friendships rather than large social circles. Small, reliable friendships reduce stress by lending predictability to girls' social lives. Parents should reassure daughters in small social circles that they're doing it right, rather than pushing them to become more popular. The reality is that numbers bring drama. It's impossible to assemble a group of five or more people who like each other equally. Large friendship groups inevitably involve compromises that create social stress. While conflict is inevitable in relationships, handling it poorly isn't. There are three unhealthy conflict management styles: bulldozer, running people over; doormat, allowing yourself to be run over; and doormat with spikes, passive-aggressive tactics like guilt, playing victim, or involving third parties. The healthy approach is to be a pillar, standing up for yourself without stepping on others. This requires recognizing our first unhealthy impulse without acting on it, then finding a more balanced second reaction. Sometimes, confrontation isn't the best approach to social conflict. When Liz returned to discuss her volleyball teammate who had excluded her, I introduced the concept of emotional Aikido, strategically sidestepping drama rather than engaging it. I explained that making a conscious choice not to engage doesn't make her a doormat. Rather, it gives her power to decide what deserves her energy. Digital technology has dramatically changed how girls conduct their social lives, contributing to rising stress levels among teenagers. Though today's teens aren't uniquely obsessed with peers, modern teens lack natural breaks from social interaction. Parents should establish technology boundaries that protect important aspects of life, face-to-face family conversations, uninterrupted homework time, physical activity, hobbies, outdoor play, and sleep. Sleep deprivation is a major contributor to girls' anxiety. Teenagers naturally experience sleep phase delay during puberty, making it difficult to fall asleep before 10 or 11 p.m. Since girls enter puberty earlier than boys, around age 12 versus 14, they often struggle more with sleep, especially given early school start times that prevent them from getting the 9 hours they actually need. When exhausted, minor problems can trigger full anxiety attacks. In addition to friendship challenges, girls face unique stressors in their interactions with boys. During a session with older high school girls, I was shocked by their detailed accounts of sexual harassment they already faced from boys in their social circles and strangers in public. The girls described how boys casually use slurs like ho and slut for trivial matters, grab their bodies without consent during group photos, and snap bra straps through their shirts. When girls object, boys often dismiss them as overreacting or cut off contact entirely. Research confirms these experiences aren't isolated. Nearly half of 8th through 11th grade girls report being touched inappropriately at school, while boys draw sexual images, comment on girls' bodies, and spread sexual rumors. Most troublingly, girls are routinely told not to complain about harassment, and many seem to question whether they're somehow at fault for their mistreatment. After my meeting with these students, I realized adults haven't done enough to address the harassment teenage girls regularly face. Girls need effective strategies for dealing with humiliating slurs and unwanted advances that cause them stress and anxiety. Many daughters are reluctant to tell parents about harassment because they've internalized shame from these experiences. When someone treats you in a degrading way, you might believe you somehow deserved it. Adults give fundamentally different messages about sexuality to teenage boys and girls. Girls typically hear a list of don'ts. Don't put yourself in compromising positions, don't get STIs, don't get pregnant, and don't damage your reputation. Boys usually receive a much shorter message: use condoms and get consent. This gender-specific messaging communicates that boys naturally possess strong sexual desires they're free to act on, with precautions, while implicitly telling girls that adults would prefer they weren't sexually active at all. This double standard places the burden of regulating adolescent sexuality entirely on girls. By failing to acknowledge girls' normal sexual desires, we force them to choose between their natural feelings and adult expectations, creating unnecessary anxiety and shame. Even when parents provide positive, equitable messaging at home, daughters face a culture with deeply encoded biases against female sexuality. We need to replace gender-specific sex talks with a single, equitable approach that frames sexuality as part of healthy development rather than a risk category. Parents should encourage daughters to reflect on what they want from physical relationships, acknowledge their desires as normal and healthy, and consider what their partners want as well. These conversations should be ongoing, adapting as girls mature, and inclusive of all sexual orientations. The concept of consent sets a problematically low bar for sexual intimacy. As a legal term describing minimum permission, it reinforces the troubling offense-defense paradigm where boys press for sex and girls serve as gatekeepers. Instead, we should teach young people to seek enthusiastic agreement with their partners. Research shows that sexually empowered girls make healthier choices. After establishing that romantic activities should be mutually enthusiastic, parents should discuss risk management, considering emotional consequences, STIs, and pregnancy. Today's generation of girls is academically outperforming boys at every level, earning better grades across all subjects, taking more advanced placement classes, achieving valedictorian status more frequently, and graduating college at higher rates. Yet these impressive achievements come with a cost, as girls report feeling significantly more stressed by school than boys do. Many girls misunderstand the fundamental nature of stress, viewing it as inherently harmful rather than potentially constructive. School, ideally, functions as progressive overload, like strength training, where gradually increasing weights build muscle. Academic challenges should steadily increase as students master material, creating productive discomfort that leads to growth. Research consistently finds that girls worry more about academics than boys, despite getting better grades. Girls tend to take teacher feedback personally, viewing grades as measures of their abilities, while boys approach school with more confidence. Girls also care more about pleasing adults, often sensing disappointment even from subtle cues like facial expressions or hesitations. This anxiety creates inefficiency. Girls often study excessively to soothe their nerves, making 50 flashcards when 20 would suffice, or developing elaborate color coding systems. This slavish overpreparation typically yields excellent grades, reinforcing the behavior until it becomes unsustainable. Natalie exemplifies this pattern, a bright sophomore staying up until 1:30 a.m. studying, spending equal time on every class regardless of assignments due. Rather than telling high-achieving girls to let up or go easy, advice that often offends them, framing the shift as becoming more tactical proves more effective. This language acknowledges they can maintain their success while becoming more efficient with their energy. Parents should have open conversations with daughters about grades and help them understand they don't need to care equally about all subjects. When we allow girls to persistently overexert themselves, they develop confidence only in their work ethic, not their talents. This creates problems as they enter the workforce. Journalists Kay and Shipman found that displaying confidence is as important to professional success as competence itself. School often serves as a confidence factory for boys who don't take failures personally and feel proud of achievements regardless of effort level. Girls, however, attribute success solely to their discipline and over-preparing. For girls whose brains aren't wired to learn in conventional ways, school becomes particularly harrowing. Girls with undiagnosed learning or attention disorders often work extremely hard but see disappointing results, leading to anxiety about letting down parents and teachers. Unfortunately, learning challenges in girls are frequently overlooked. Studies show that while boys and girls have equal rates of reading problems, boys get referred for evaluation much more often. Many families use what I call the ballistics model of success, viewing high school as setting launch coordinates that determine a girl's entire future trajectory. This model makes little sense. Plenty of people attend prestigious colleges yet lead miserable lives, while others with middling academic records find fulfillment. Instead, we should view education as an early stretch of a long, self-determined path. Our culture imposes unfair expectations on girls to be agreeable, forthcoming, and attractive. Addressing these pressures requires recognizing these irrational standards, becoming aware of how we replicate them at home, teaching our daughters to question destructive social conventions, and helping them navigate cultural pressures without sacrificing their authentic selves. Ninth grader Nikki sought help for severe insomnia, staying awake until 2-3 a.m. despite exhaustion. Initially, we focused on relaxation techniques that helped somewhat. Then, Nikki reported sudden improvement due to a stress fracture forcing her to take 6 weeks off from gymnastics. Without her grueling schedule, her anxiety plummeted. Despite wanting to quit gymnastics permanently, Nikki felt trapped by her coach's disappointment when she previously tried to leave. This illustrates the double standard girls face. Those who decline requests risk being labeled inconsiderate, diva, or worse, while boys' refusals are often excused as boys being boys. Parents often start as cultural firefighters, defending daughters from sexism and encouraging them to be empowered. Yet we contradict ourselves when our daughters decline social invitations we think they should accept. We pressure them to say yes, fearing they'll be labeled rude or mean girls. While children sometimes must do things they dislike, like visiting boring relatives, we miss crucial opportunities to teach our daughters to decline optional activities that make them unhappy. The advice for girls to always speak boldly and directly oversimplifies communication challenges. This guidance assumes girls are naturally meek, they aren't, and boys are always commanding, they aren't. Girls can be quite direct when not worried about damaging relationships, while boys and men often communicate politely and indirectly when needed. However, women face a genuine double standard. Behavior seen as assertive in men is labeled pushy in women. Girls often feel pressured to be completely transparent about their thoughts and feelings. During a workshop with sixth grade girls, one student was troubled by the suggestion that saying, "I have plans," when declining an invitation might be dishonest. Many girls struggle with this perceived obligation to full disclosure, misinterpreting advice about authenticity as requiring complete transparency. This creates an impossible bind when combined with cultural pressure to be agreeable. They can't simultaneously reveal all their complicated feelings while remaining universally pleasing. We all have front stage, public, and backstage personas, and girls should understand this distinction. Parents can help by teaching daughters the difference between brain annoyed and behavior polite, acknowledging negative feelings while maintaining appropriate conduct. Creating safe spaces at home where girls can freely express frustrations without judgment helps them manage public behavior better. Our culture constantly signals to girls that their appearance is paramount, promoting an impossible beauty ideal. This preoccupation with looks creates anxiety as girls feel their value rides on genetic lottery rather than qualities they can control. Studies show that simply commenting on a young woman's appearance can temporarily erode her intellectual abilities. Parents should downplay the importance of surface features and highlight everything else about their daughters. Research consistently shows participating in sports improves how girls feel about their bodies. A large-scale study found girls in organized team activities took more pride in what their bodies could do compared to those who simply exercised or were sedentary. Notably, sports focusing on skill, speed, and strength fostered more body satisfaction than activities emphasizing physical appearance, like dance and gymnastics, which can actually worsen girls' body image. Our daughters face pressure from all directions: family relationships, friendships, romance, school demands, and cultural expectations, all intensified by constant social media and a relentless news cycle. The digital age has amplified these pressures exponentially, with girls receiving hundreds of messages daily about how they should look, act, achieve, and relate to others. When girls come to us distressed, our instinct to rescue or shelter them is natural but ineffective. Whether it's intervening in friend disputes, completing homework for them, or shielding them from disappointment, these well-intentioned protective actions ultimately weaken their coping abilities. Stress and anxiety don't diminish through avoidance. They grow more harrowing. The most effective approach is to face these challenges directly. Girls must learn to identify the sources of their stress and understand why they feel anxious. For instance, a girl struggling with test anxiety needs to recognize whether it stems from inadequate preparation, perfectionism, or fear of disappointing others. Stress often emerges when girls operate at their capacity limits, ultimately helping them grow stronger. This might manifest as the nervous energy before a dance performance, the tension of trying out for a sports team, or the uncertainty of making new friends. Anxiety typically arrives as a messenger, alerting them to potential problems that need attention or action. By helping our daughters advance rather than retreat from challenges, we allow them to discover their own courage and resilience. What makes this approach revolutionary is its counterintuitive premise: not all stress is harmful. Understanding the difference between healthy and unhealthy forms can transform how we help our daughters navigate these turbulent years. Healthy stress motivates study for important exams, encourages preparation for presentations, and drives personal growth. Unhealthy stress, by contrast, paralyzes and overwhelms. When we treat stress and anxiety as normal, healthy parts of life that can be managed rather than eliminated, we give our daughters the tools they need to thrive in an increasingly complex world. The key insights from this exploration of girls' stress and anxiety are clear. First, some stress is necessary for growth, serving as a catalyst for developing new skills and capabilities. Second, anxiety often serves as a protective mechanism, warning of potential risks or areas requiring attention. Third, how we respond to our daughter's distress shapes their ability to handle future challenges. Offering support without taking over allows them to build confidence in their problem-solving abilities. And finally, by helping girls understand the forces creating their anxiety, whether from family dynamics, peer relationships, romantic pressures, academic demands, or cultural expectations, we empower them to develop strategies that transform overwhelming pressure into manageable tension that fuels their development rather than undermining it. Teaching girls to recognize the physical signs of stress and anxiety, racing thoughts, rapid heartbeat, stomach butterflies, helps them develop awareness of their emotional state. Equipping them with practical tools like deep breathing, mindfulness exercises, and positive self-talk provides concrete ways to manage these feelings. Most importantly, showing them through our own example that challenges can be faced and overcome builds their belief in their own capability to handle life's pressures.